announcement for the call. So I haven't gotten any documents since I've for the last 6 weeks.
Okay.
Hi, this is Barbara joining the call. I'll make sure Glenn knows, David, that you need to have your address updated.
Yeah, Glenn just mentioned there are some problems with the mailing list, so I don't know if that's related or not. But hopefully they'll be resolved regardless of whether...
Muting canceled.
...address is not present.
Yes, David, sorry, that is due to me that I haven't updated the list. Please forgive me, I'll do it straight away.
That's okay, and if you could just send me any of the documents, that'd be great.
Okay, fine. Well, when you are updated, you'll be seeing everything that's on the list, okay? But I'll send them to you.
Okay, great.
This is Milton Mueller.
Hi, Milton.
You are now muted.
So far I have Jordan, Thomas Rosler, myself, David Ferris, Barbara Roseman, and Milton. Did I miss anyone? Okay, do we have any... So we have no IP, we have no ISP, we have Jordan from the registrars, although Paul, I guess, is supposed to be the rep.
Either Paul or Tom.
Or Tom, right. So we're not doing well here. Not yet. Glenn, if you could can you send David the latest document that I posted up on the list? Because I think that's the one we'll be talking about.
Okay, I'll do that too.
Marilyn.
Hi, Marilyn. Okay, Marilyn, we're still...
Marilyn, how are you?
Good.
We're still waiting for people, but so far we have Jordan, Thomas Rosler, myself, David Ferris, Barbara Roseman, Milton, and yourself.
Thanks.
Excuse me. Hopefully we'll get someone, hopefully we'll get Steve or someone from the IP constituency. Hopefully we'll get a registrar other than Jordan. And I guess since David Maher's not going to be here, I guess I'm the registry rep on the call. I was supposed to be getting people. It sounds like we're losing people.
Yeah.
All right, we'll wait another minute, I guess. Hey, Glenn, did Steve say anything about whether he was joining or not?
One with key.
Muting canceled.
No, he didn't say anything at all. I thought he probably would be because wasn't there
there wasn't a
mail from him. No, I have no response from him.
Yeah, but considering he sent an email to discuss the list, I would imagine...
You are now muted.
Hi, this is Barbara rejoining the call. Something went wrong with my mobile.
We thought we just bored you too much and just decided to leave. All right, well, I think what the agenda is today is really just to focus on the latest drafts that have been going on about the procedure for conflicts. And I think the latest draft, I think Milton had... through Kathy Kleinman had submitted a draft, and then Steve Metallic made some edits, and then I made some edits as well. And so what I think we can do then is just go through that draft, starting with Milton, and then we'll talk about Steve's edits and then my edits, and hopefully we'll come to a good position so that hopefully this is the last call on this subject, but we'll still continue on the list to get it final if people still have comments. So, Milton, why don't I turn it over to you?
Okay.
And you could talk about the changes you made from the previous version.
Well, as you remember, I had a two-track version. We had a procedure initiated by registrars and a procedure that when governments initiated something. And there was some difficulty with that. And I think we agreed on the last call to basically keep it a one-track process and just provide some kind of an escape valve if governments require immediate compliance. So that's what I tried to do. And then, as I recall, the major issue was how does ICANN react to this and when does ICANN get involved in the process? So what I tried to do was basically when a registrar was notified of an investigation or some kind of other relevant proceeding that might affect its compliance with the RAA, it fairly quickly notified the ICANN's general counsel with information that was less burdensome than what Steve initially proposed, but more inclusive than what I had initially proposed, kind of striking a middle ground. And then they went through a consultation process, which is what people agreed, you know, that there was some value in trying to maintain the uniformity of the contracts, basically for competition policy purposes, is the sense I got from the registrars I've talked with, that they're concerned about people who might game this process to improve their competitiveness at the expense of others. So you go through a consultation process, step two, and then in step three, if indeed changes are required that prevent full compliance, ICANN shall refrain. Basically, the registrar is allowed to comply on a provisional basis with this contractual variance, if you will. And in the meantime, the general counsel prepares a report and recommendation and submits it to the board for the decision. And I guess the basic decision here, which nobody really wants to sort of say outright, is that ICANN has to decide whether to de-accredit the registrar and knock them out of business based on this, or whether to let them continue in business. So the ICANN general counsel prepares a report and recommendation. And then once that the board acts on that recommendation, they have some options which are outlined. There doesn't seem to be any disagreement about that. Now, I think the main difference I see between what I've done and what Steve has done in his proposed modifications concern the preamble, which I'm somewhat surprised about. In my version, there is a preamble which, first of all, simply restates what the Task Force 2 already agreed, that there is this ongoing risk of conflict, which I think is valuable background. And secondly, the preamble in my version tried to set forth some principles that would be used for in guiding the board and the general counsel in making recommendations about what to do when a variance to the contract is required by national law. And I put forth two principles. One is that who is data per se is really not part of ICANN's core mission. But second principle is that it is desirable to maintain, insofar as possible and legal, the uniformity of the registrar contracts in order to provide a level playing field for competition. So all I'm trying to do there is basically say, look, guys, you do have the latitude to be flexible about WHOIS requirements if you want to, but we do want to maintain uniformity for the purposes of fair competition. And I think you need some kind of principle, some kind of policy to guide these recommendations by the general counsel and the decisions by the board. So that's pretty much what I proposed.
I just wanted to join the call.
Okay.
Sorry for being late.
Okay. Did anyone else join? Okay. Unfortunately, Steve's not here to talk about his revisions. does anybody else have any comments? We'll start with the preamble. With respect to the preamble, I think. Well, let me see if there's any comments on that.
Paul Stahura has joined.
Hey, Paul.
Hey.
Marilyn, you sounded like you wanted to chime in.
I had a question, first of all, just to Milton could point someplace. And he said that he made reference to principles, and I wasn't sure what he was pointing to in the document.
It was in the beginning of the document. It's titled Preamble, and there's three, no, four paragraphs there.
Ah, the maintaining, I see. Yeah, I'm not sure, well, that I agree with the statement that the task force would agree that maintaining global availability of WHOIS data is not part of ICANN's core mission. I think that's something that has been strongly supported by at least the BC. So, you know, I have a little bit of trouble with the idea that it's a put forward as a task force principle.
Well, I just quoted Article 1, Section 1 of the bylaws. It's very difficult to read that article in any way that has anything to do with WHOIS.
I think...
I mean, I understand that your constituency supports a certain approach to the availability of WHOIS data, and that's basically a policy decision. We understand that we have some variance in our positions on that, but that's sort of separate from the issue of whether it's part of the core mission of ICANN. I think that's pretty cut and dried.
Hey, Milton, what if we just took out that first part, you know, listening to Marilyn, because it may attract some debate on just that first sentence, you know, maintaining global availability is not part of ICANN's core mission. What if the first principle were just registrar contracts regarding the collection, display, and distribution of WHOIS data can vary without undermining the interoperability of the Internet?
Yeah, that's fine with me. Do you want to strike the first sentence?
But Jeff, thanks for that effort. But, you know, I'm not sure that my constituency would agree with that. And I think in actually reviewing the initial report that was received by the Security and Stability Advisory Committee quite a long time ago, about doing the work of the first WHOIS task force, there was support from the Security and Stability Advisory Committee for the importance of WHOIS. And by stating that it's a principle that the task force agrees to, it puts it in a very strong position that I really don't think that my constituency can support. At the same time, I'm trying to think about reflecting the flexibility that I think underlies the point that Milton is making, and that is that there may be situations where a national, where a country has specified action by a registrar, and the registrar needs to be able to comply with it.
Okay. I'm sorry. Did someone else just join?
Yes. Hi. It's Maggie Mansork here. Sorry, I'm late.
That's okay. Okay. So taking Marilyn's last point and trying to reconcile that with Milton, is there a way we can state this, Milton, that's less, what's the word I'm looking for, less controversial? I think we do want to maintain some sort of flexibility. You know, ICANN needs to be flexible in these types of situations.
Well, I think what Marilyn said is already recognized in the first paragraph of the preamble. But I really think, yeah, the first sentence that you propose striking can be seen as fairly bald and direct, and I'm happy to get rid of it. But I think the second sentence is pretty much factual. Registrar contracts regarding collection, display, and distribution of WHOIS data can vary, maybe we can say very moderately, or, you know, can be flexible or something without undermining the interoperability of the Internet, the coordination of unique identifiers, or the operation and evolution of the root name servers. I really just think that's true. I mean, as a factual matter, I'm sure that nobody in the Security and Stability Committee would disagree with that statement. It's simply uniformity of WHOIS data is not required. You know, it's not a life or death issue, for example, the way some people would see a single root of the namespace or you know, having some kind of top-level coordination of the address space. It's a secondary thing. I don't know why anybody would object to that. If you're going to recognize that we do have to vary in relation to national law, why don't we recognize the reality and make everybody feel better about that by realizing that minor variances in the registrar contracts regarding collection and display and distribution are not going to undermine the interoperability of the Internet.
Well, Milton, to address that further, I do think that, you know, if it were to be a single variance, that might be one thing, but if we see dozens to hundreds of variances, then I think that that's a very different issue. And one of the things that we've tried to maintain in the registrar environment is a certain amount of uniformity and consistency for a number of reasons. One of them, as you noted, because of the need to have a fair and balanced and level playing field from a competition perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But I have concerns about asserting this as a principle because it makes a very strong statement that contracts can vary, and then it makes a statement about what the impact will be on the interoperability of the Internet and the evolution of the root name.
Tony Harris, joining.
And I think that that work in that space before has been done by the CPAC, and that they did indicate their support for the need for a continued open and accessible WHOIS. At the same time, we're trying to come up with a procedure which could allow, when needed, because of conflict with national law, certain kinds of flexibility that ICANN could exercise. But I don't think we ought to be calling for an environment which would create a huge variance, but one which would provide the ability upon to have the exception.
Where do we call for that? We simply recognize a fact, and again, the language could be moderated a bit more, but it's simply recognizing a fact.
I have a quick
Registrar contracts regarding the collection, display, and distribution of WHOIS data can vary.
This is David. I have a question. Isn't that inherent? If we're developing a procedure to resolve the conflict between a contract and national law, it's somewhat inherent in what we're doing. So why do we need to state it explicitly?
Hey, Milton, as a suggestion, what if we put the very first paragraph of the preamble back in, which basically says that WHOIS Task Force 2 anticipated, and then it just quotes two of the provisions in the earlier report, and then just followed it up by a sentence with your second point, which is, however, the task force recognizes that it's desirable to maintain, insofar as it is possible, the uniformity of GTLD registrar contracts to create a level playing field for competition.
Well, because that's a bit one-sided. We are, I think...
Well, but the initial part says that there's an ongoing risk.
There's a risk. Now, what I want to do is recognize that maybe we could say something to the effect that,
it says
ICANN has the ability to vary these registrar contracts in ways that will not undermine the interoperability of the Internet, blah, 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 blah.
Well, the first sentence would say there's a risk. The second sentence says the task force determined that there should be an exception. And then the third sentence says, however, it recognizes that it's desirable to maintain as far as possible the uniformity. So I think you got the 3 points in those three sections without getting into interoperability of the Internet, which I think may draw unnecessary fire to the proposal.
Well, I guess I still don't understand why it would, because I haven't heard any factual challenges to that point.
But Milton, I do think that my challenges are factual, and I've also referenced the Security and Stability Advisory Committee's input that we received to the last task force. So, you know,
but what is the statement specifically of the Security and Stability Advisory Committee? Do they say that if you vary the display and distribution of Whois data, you are undermining the
quantity
of unique identifiers?
No, they don't say that. But they gave us a report that we all probably remember about the importance of having open, correct, and accurate Whois. But let's see if we can compromise along the lines that Jeff was proposing. And the preamble, I don't know if we'd still call it the preamble or not, but it'd be the opening statement, would acknowledge that the task force, it's task force 1/2, I think, right? Or here we're quoting from task force.
We're quoting task force 2.
Okay. So since this is going to come from this task force, eventually we might want to come down to language that would describe what this task force is putting forward. But in any case, anticipated an ongoing risk of conflict between a registrar's or registry's legal obligations under local privacy law and the contractual obligations, and went on then to say that they determined that there should be the ability to they should be allowed an exception for the part of the Whois data in question by the local regulation. And then if we keep the statement, it is desirable to maintain, insofar as possible and legal, the uniformity of the registrar contracts to create a level playing field. That's kind of the background, and then we would go on to say the following procedures are intended to facilitate reconciliation of any conflicts. So that would be the background statement, and then we would introduce the procedure and focus in on the procedure.
Well, as a provisional compromise, I could live with that. I still am a little bit leery of what the real issue is here. But as long as we're keeping this first paragraph in, which makes it clear that exceptions are should be allowed, that could be acceptable.
This is Jordan. Can I actually jump in? I actually had in a previous email to the list when attempting to discuss this topic had put forth sort of an interpretation of the task force 2 intent that is not specifically enumerated that maybe would be helpful to say explicitly here that may sort of reconcile your issues, Milton, without necessarily going into the purpose or intent of Whois or how contracts should be altered. And that is just simply that if a conflict between national law and the between the national law relating to privacy and the ICANN contract as it relates to the collection and display of Whois information come into conflict, then the intent of the policy is to allow the registrar to comply with its national law without violating their ICANN contract. And so always the presupposition is that the registrar ought to be able to comply with its national law and still remain a registrar.
Well, I think that the opening paragraph already says that.
Okay, I mean, if you think it already says that, then I think...
Yeah.
Moving away from that, something that really makes me wonder is why, if the registrar or the registry should be allowed to have that exception, why is it that the board still has to take action on that and vote on it, whether it's allowed or not? Something just strikes me a little bit strange.
That's a good point that I was going to come to later about whether it's possible to have a formalized enough set of criteria that it wouldn't take board action, but that it would take review by the staff and agreement by the staff, but not necessarily require board action. I would hope we could approve, we could get a consensus policy approved by the board, and then staff would implement it.
Well, if we got to think about what board action is required for.
Okay.
Under this scenario, the board action is not required for the registrar to take whatever step it needs to take. Board action would be required for ICANN to, on a contractual basis, go after the registrar for violation of the contract. And that's something we can't ever really take away from the ICANN staff or board.
So you're saying
it's
some kind of a ratification process?
Yeah, if there was some sort of revocation process or some sort of penalty or enforcement action by the ICANN, that's what requires board action, not whether the registry or registrar can take the action that it feels it needs to take in compliance with the law. And I'm hoping this draft makes that clear, but it may not.
Yeah, what will happen in the instant that the board is against that action and says, well, you might have that law, but we rather discredit you?
Yeah, that's
the possibility of it.
That's,
you know, that's something where I myself as a registrar feel a little bit insecure that the board, which might be set up in a certain way, you know, is just allowing certain people to participate in the whole game.
Hi, this is Steve Metallic joining. Sorry I'm late.
Hi, Steve. We're in the draft, the latest draft. We're talking about the preamble.
Mm-hmm.
I think the group has so far decided to, at least for now, to take the first paragraph that I think you initially struck,
mm-hmm.
put that back in, take the rest of the stuff that you struck, leave it out except for a last sentence added to the first paragraph, which would say, however, the task force recognizes that it's desirable to maintain, insofar as it is possible, the uniformity of GTLD registrar and registry contracts to create a level playing field for competition, and then it would jump into the following procedures are intended.
Okay.
So now what we're now talking about is there was a little confusion as to later on in the draft, and maybe we should just push it to a little bit later till we get to it, but there was a question brought up on what exactly the board action is, what the ICANN board is actually acting on, and I made the point that according to this draft, the board is not acting on whether the registry or registrar can do what it needs to do to comply with whatever it is, the
mm-hmm.
law, or but that the board is acting on whether it's going to seek any kind of enforcement of
right.
a con.
Right.
And Tom, do you want to just repeat your last point? Because I think Steve was coming on and I kind of...
Well, yeah, the point I was making is that if the board has the final word to it, you know, even though the local government has already made up its mind in this decision, you know, the board can take the action and disaccredit a registrar, and that, depending on the setting the board might have, will, you know, only allow certain people to play in the game. You know, it's not really international about this. Well, you might have this law, and because you have this law, you're not allowed to be a registrar anymore. I could understand that even to a certain extent if we talk about real crucial things. For example, a state issues a law saying, well, you're not allowed to transfer any domain names or something like that. You know, that would be something that's just disrupting the whole service. But right now we're only talking about WHOIS issues and whether things can be shown or not on the WHOIS, and I think that's a little bit disappropriate for ICANN to kind of rule over local judgments.
Well, I'm not sure it's a question that can really be decided in advance. I mean, in theory, there could be a situation where the ICANN board could decide, you know, this is so far from what was agreed to that we don't think it should continue in this way. But I think in most cases that would not be the case. I mean, this is the reason to having this consultation process, again, to try to minimize the degree of deviation from the contractual obligations. But I don't think you can say in advance, no matter what, that anything that the registrar has to do to comply with local law, ICANN simply says, yes, we don't care about our contract anymore.
And I think the political realities, I mean, if you drew it to its logical conclusion, is if, let's say, Germany passed the law or, you're under investigation and it turns out that you can't display the email address or the phone number of the registrant, and that's ultimately what the German privacy authority comes down and says, and you need to withdraw that, the political realities of ICANN basically saying that, you know, we're not going to allow any registrar to be located in Germany, I think it's not very feasible.
Yeah, I'm not too concerned about Germany, actually. You know, it's more about maybe other states, you know, which don't have that power in some ways, you know. Don't get me wrong on that. It, you know, the only thing I may ask you to consider is that we say something along the lines of, if the action is not disrupting the service and it is local law, it has to be passed by the board, something like that. You know, if we can really narrow it down to only a certain case. You know, for example, if someone is giving the order to shut down Who Is It All, there will be no transfers anymore. So that's bad, and that's conflicting with the system, and it breaks the system. So that shouldn't be happening, you know. But if it's just, for example, you have to take out the street, or you can't show something to all people but only to the registrars or something, that doesn't necessarily break the system.
Yeah, I like the idea of adding specific criteria for the board disapproving or de-accrediting the registrar. I think that's a good idea. And again, that's sort of why I put in that first principle that if maybe it should have been put in a conditional sense, is that if it's not breaking the system, if it's not undermining the interoperability of the Internet, there's plenty of room for variance in the way you handle Who Is.
Okay, let me take a cue because it sounds like a couple people want to speak. I think I heard Steve.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Oh, okay, Steve.
Yeah, I mean this was the concern I had about Milton's original formulation here is that I don't think we can agree in advance that Who Is really is not very important to the what ICANN is about. And therefore, you know, I don't want to put that in a second-class status. I agree that the board should, first of all, there is a whole process for disaccreditation. It's not just the board saying you're disaccredited. There's a whole process that has to go on before that can happen. And there's the registrar registry has some rights in that process, and I think it ends in an arbitration. I don't know all the details, but there is in the contract, there is a whole procedure that's set out. So I think the most the board can do is initiate that procedure, I would think. And, again, I don't think that would be likely to happen, but I think you just need to give the board flexibility to determine, well, how serious a deviation is this from what's set out in the contract? What's going to be its impact on users, on registrants, on security, on, you know, all the things that Who is used for? And then, you know, make a decision. I don't think we should constrain it in advance to say this is off limits, that's off limits. I think you have to, at some level, have an expectation that the board is going to try to act in the best interest of the entire system.
But isn't that the government that making the same decision for their people in some way? And if they issue some kind of recommendation, however you want to call it, you know, or law, shouldn't it be followed by the people living there?
But, Tom, I'm not...
It's just, if it's not a disturbance of the system at all, I don't see why ICANN should be concerned with it at all, you know.
Yeah, I think somebody else get in the queue here.
Tom, yeah, can I get in the queue? I'd like to ask Tom a question.
Sure, Marilyn, yep.
Do you want me to ask it now, or...?
Yeah, please.
Tom, I don't think there's any disagreement about if a country decides to pass the law, but there are situations where a country passes a law that is so general that the question of whether it is directly applicable or not still remains to be determined by courts. And, you know, we also have the situation where the European Directive on Data Privacy was enacted by the Commission, is being instantiated by the member states, is being instantiated differently in the member states, and yet there is an exception to that directive, which is in fact a regulation or a law, for data transfer to countries that have been either because of a contract that is signed by foreign country's company that is doing business in that country, or because the government in the other country has negotiated a safe harbor with the country where the data is being transferred from. Yet you would say there's a law in the UK, for instance, on data transfer, but there's a way to comply with the law through either having a contract with the Data Privacy Commission in that country or by having the other government establish a safe harbor agreement.
Or just general determination of adequacy.
Right. And so, you know, there are those variances there.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Can I get into the queue here? I think there's a legal question here.
Yeah, let me that question was to Tom, so I'll put Tom and then Milton and anybody else want to be in the queue?
Jordan. This is Steve. I'd like to get in.
Steve? Anybody else?
Jordan.
Okay, so Tom, since that question was for you.
Okay. So, well, I understand and I agree with you.
Thank you.
The only thing, what I'm saying is, we will have the consultation process, and something I think we really should do anyway, you know. I mean, that's one of the important things. But if the legal counsel finds out that this thing has to be done and it's not negotiable and the registrar has to abide to it and has nothing to do with any kind of operational problems, it should be passed by the ICANN board every time and not how it deems them to judge on it.
Okay.
I agree with it, but just to a certain part.
Let me go to Milton and then Steve and Jordan.
Yeah, I think it's pretty easy to satisfy Thomas here. I think we just need down in step 3, where we're talking about the general counsel analysis and recommendation, and also perhaps step 4, where we're guiding the board in making a decision. We simply need to say that you don't de-accredit registrars unless somehow the interoperability of the Internet or other core functions of ICANN are threatened by the variants. I think it's pretty easy to do. I don't see, again, why anybody would object to it. It's what I tried to do in that first principle, although I apparently stated it in such a strong fashion that it raised controversies. But it's not. It's a much more moderate version of what I was trying to do. It's simply saying, rather than saying this is a overarching principle, you're saying the general counsel can't just decide to recommend deaccrediting a registrar because he wants to play hardball with the world's privacy authorities and say, let's play chicken. You try to impose your privacy laws on us. We'll deaccredit your registrars. You know,
what about
probably wouldn't happen given the consultation, but if it did, there just needs to be something in there that says you can't recommend, you know, deaccrediting the registrar unless there's some fundamental interoperability question.
So basically,
would anybody object to that?
Milton, what you're saying is that there's a kind of a rebuttable, a presumption, basically a presumption in favor of the registry or registrar unless the ICANN board finds that it affects the interoperability of the Internet or something like that. That's what you're arguing? All right.
Yeah.
Steve, you're next.
I don't object to the concept of perhaps saying something in there in step 3 about what, you know, what should be the basis of this recommendation, but I don't think it's, you know, I think interoperability of the Internet may be the wrong criterion. I just don't think we can rule out the possibility that a dramatic, you know, a situation in which a registrar comes far out of compliance with its obligations with respect to display of who is data or collection of data might be grounds for determining that they shouldn't be a registrar anymore. I just don't think you can rule that out in advance. So that I would just like to make sure that we have the flexibility there to accommodate that.
Okay, Jordan?
It seems to me there's really two questions here, and one, and we're conflating them to a certain extent, and one question is, given that a registrar believes that there is some conflict with the national law, what is the minimal change to the sort of ICANN process that is required in order to comply with that? And I think the process here is very useful for determining what that is. It may be that there's actually a way to do it with no change. It may be that the registrar initially thought they would have to turn off WHOIS, and the actual resolution is that they, you know, mask out the email address. I mean, I don't want to presuppose, but there's some sort of minimal deviation from the requirements of their ICANN contract in order to comply with national law. And I think we can all agree that, that this process, it sounds like we've got a consensus around this process is useful for determining that that topic. But the second question seems to be that given that a given that that point has been determined, what is the minimal deviation from the ICANN contract needed in order to comply with national law or regulation? Should registrars be deaccredited based on fulfilling that minimal change? And what I think what I'm hearing Tom say absolutely not, under no circumstances, as long as the change relates to privacy and who is. And I think I just heard Steve say that there may be circumstances under which they should be. And I think the second question, I think we've all sort of, you know, gotten to a similar consensus on number one, but the second question I think maybe is where we need to strive for maybe some guidance or at least some answer from the task force.
I'd like to get in the queue. It's Paul.
Okay. Paul? You're up.
I think it depends, Jordan, in your example, let's say that to comply with the national law, they have to change, they have to block out the email address, and then that creates a ripple effect. Another, like, it prevents transfers from happening, because now when I try to, you know, send an email to the registrant to transfer to ENAM, let's say, I don't know what it is, because I'm not in the same country as the guy who, the losing registrar. So I would say, in, you know, generally I agree with, if it was anything else that didn't have this kind of side effect of affecting transfers, I'm okay with it. But if it's something like the email address that they have to block out in order to comply with the national law, then what happens in that case is my question. That to me, that would not be good for competition.
Right.
And then registrars would start, you know, congregating in that country so that they wouldn't have to, you know, that they could get around the whole transfer. They could hold their names hostage or whatever, their registrants hostage, get around the whole, you know, the whole idea of forum shopping would start happening.
Right. So it seems that you're just basically agreeing with Steve that there may be circumstances under which deaccreditation is appropriate, even given a minimal compliance with national regulations.
Yes, but in general, I do. But there would be, like, really specific circumstances. In other words, you'd have to prevent the national law, complying with the national law, if it prevents transfers, then I would agree with Steve. In all other cases, I agree with Tom.
Well, can I get in queue?
Sure, Tom, and then anybody else? I'd like to actually ask a question as well after Tom.
Okay. What I'm saying is that as long as does not have any kind of operational problems to it, you know, it should be passed by the board in any case. And that's exactly what addressed poll concerns. If someone is forced by his government to take out the email address, the whole system breaks. And that's something that is very obvious to the legal counsel and to all the participants. If it's up negotiations with the privacy officer of that country, if he still insists on having this regulation done that way, the ICANN board does not have to pass it if the board doesn't like it, because it has operational impact. But in case you just have to take out, for example, the name server or the street address or the postal address or whatever, you know, that has no implications into the operational matters whatsoever, and that should be passed in any case.
Can I ask you a question?
This is Steve. Can I get in the queue?
Sure. Who was the first person that said I have a question?
Paul said.
Okay, so Paul, then Steve.
So if the national law says you must remove the email, I just want to be clear on this. National law says you can't show the email address, and that would have this system-wide implication that breaks the system. What do you recommend ICANN do? They deaccredit or not deaccredit?
I'm not talking about what ICANN should do. I'm just saying that if it strikes operational issues, ICANN board should decide on it. If it does not strike any operational issues, ICANN board should always consent to it.
Oh, I see. I think that makes sense to me.
You know, it's always an individual decision, you know, and I don't want to make it. I don't want to make it now, you know. It all comes down to the real solution, you know, or to the real issue. And that can be solved by the in-house, by staff and by the board, you know. But in general principle, if it doesn't touch anything operational, why shouldn't the board go along these lines, you know?
Okay. Steve?
I see, and not use it as an excuse to decredit somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me go to Steve, and then let's see if we can move forward.
Yeah. Well, we're making a lot of assumptions here about what has an operational impact, and I think Tom, who knows the registrar business inside and out, has a very good idea of what has an operational impact on the registrar business. But who is not just about the registrar business, and I don't think we can assume in advance what will or won't have an operational impact on other important uses of who is. I mean, we've already encountered that in this task force, that not everyone... We don't each understand that well exactly how other constituencies, for example, use WHOIS. So I think I would agree again with the idea of saying having something in there that says you shouldn't lightly start this accreditation process. But I think we have to be careful about how the standard is phrased to make it clear that we're not just talking about what interferes with the registrar business, but that there are a lot of other interests that are relying on a uniform and stable WHOIS system.
Can I get in queue, please?
Is that Tom?
Yeah, me too. Yeah, Tony Harris.
Okay, hold on. So let me write this down. So we got Tom, Milton, Tony, and I'll put myself in as well. Okay, Tom.
Yeah, just to answer this question, I know that there are other concerns and there are other uses to it as well, but right now we're talking about the registrar contract and the registrar's possibility to register domain names. And if it doesn't change anything to the operational side of the registrars and registries, and we're talking about the registrars and registries contracts, I don't see why we should consider any other concerns, actually.
Okay.
Because they're considered by their state already.
Milton?
Yeah. When Steve, when you say that there are other interests involved, it's true that there people are interested in, you know, the outcome of this WHOIS process. There is an interest from the policy, you know, the privacy advocates. There's an interest of the governments. There's an interest of the registrars. But I think we don't disagree that the criterion, the general criterion that should be used, which is unless there is a major operational problem, that ICANN's board should basically rubber stamp the variance that was negotiated with the government. I just don't see... I mean, I think we're arguing about the backstory about... possibilities and unforeseen things, but fundamentally, if we keep it in general terms, and unless there's a serious operational problem, which is all ICANN's mission is, ICANN's mission is not to assure the flow of WHOIS data. That's not in its statement. That's not in its constitution. It never was part of its fundamental mission. It's been a nice byproduct for some people, but. In terms of the core mission of ICANN, which it is supposed to be looking out for, it has to concentrate on, is there some variance in this contract that really that really messes up the way the Internet works, including the way, you know, the DNS and the WHOIS interact. I think we do have to pay attention to that. But... I really don't see a disagreement between you and Tom here, Steve, because all I see Tom saying is, you know, let's just rubber stamp it unless there's a serious problem. And his criteria for a serious problem is some kind of interoperability or operational problem. I don't think that commits you to anything specific. It could mean a number of different things.
Let me go to Tony.
Yeah, well, what is a serious problem? Who says what is a serious problem? That's one thing I would come up with immediately. which is why I feel comfortable with what Steve wrote out here in the first place.
So what if we, I put myself in the queue here. I think I want to kind of move on a little bit, but what I've captured here is a notion of, it seems to be, most people are comfortable with kind of a presumption of accepting the registry or registrar action, but allowing flexibility where it affects operations or interoperability, and I think what we need to do is come up with that language. And so what I want to do is kind of put that as an action item so we can go through the rest of the draft. And if this is the last issue remaining, I think we're doing well. The other point is, just from a lawyer standpoint, it's very difficult to put into a contract or to force one party to actually enforce an action or not enforce an action from just a purely private party contract to another, like a private party contract with another private party. Nobody wants in their contracts when they must enforce something or when they cannot enforce anything. So recognizing this contractual principles, we need to be careful, because I'm not sure, and I know Barbara's on here but probably won't speak to this, but I'm not sure that the general counsel would like their actions to be so constrained all the time that they need some built-in flexibility. So what I've done is I've captured that as an action item, and I think, unless anyone objects, because it's getting kind of late in the call, if we could move on to some of the other changes that were made, and we'll discuss some language to insert in here on the list.
Yeah, I think you should do it on the list.
Okay. Okay. So moving on past the preamble, and I think the changes here aren't as major. I think Steve had changed the words from formally notified to once. This is in the first paragraph under the procedure, step one. Steve had changed it to once learning of an investigation. I recommended changing it back to receiving notification, but not necessarily formal notification, because you know that could be defined 100 different ways. So it's my recommendation saying once receiving notification. But Steve, what is your concern?
I'm okay with that. The formal notification could be very late in the process. We want to encourage people to start this consultation process as early as possible. I mean, because the idea being that with more input early in the process, we could avoid having these issues be confrontational issues at the board.
Right.
I'm okay with your change, though.
Okay. Milton, you okay with that?
Oh, yeah. No problem. I mean, no problem at all.
Okay. Then I created a defined term of who is proceeding, and that might not be the right term that people want to use, but I just put it in there because of later on. I introduced kind of a confidentiality aspect to this, and I was thinking of this as an attorney representing my registry, that if there was litigation filed against my company or an investigation against my company, the first thing I would think of doing is to protect communications between myself and my company and protect information from under the attorney-client privilege. And I would also be very careful about any information that I disseminate. So thinking like a lawyer, I added, at least in the first couple of steps, the confidentiality that, depending on the specific circumstances of the proceeding, the registry, registrar may request that I can't keep all correspondence between the parties confidential pending the outcome of the who is proceeding. I didn't know if anyone's got an issue with that.
I'm okay with that. In my original proposal, I think I said normally this would not be made public at this point. So, you know, I'm comfortable with that, so long as ultimately, you know, if there's a decision made that makes a difference, it's made public.
Yeah. And I think, and that's more in step five. So,
yeah.
Milton or anyone else, do you have a problem in step one of including a sentence like what I did in the last draft?
Nope. I have a question.
Sure, Paul. Okay.
If there were more than one registrar in a country, and there was, you know, would we lump them all together? You know, let's say three guys in the same country are doing the same thing. Would we have three separate, run this procedure for three separate times, or just say they're all in one big basket?
I think it's up to each registry or registrar to actually make a determination that it wants to take an action.
So it is theoretically possible for one German registrar to say, well, first of all, for an investigation to only involve one German registrar, or a lawsuit only suing one registrar, and it's also possible that all the registrars. So I think it's really dependent on the circumstance.
To give you an example, for example, in Germany, it might be the case that one who is not in the same county as I am has different kind of different interpretation of laws as I do.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so then going on to step two, Steve had changed. Originally, Milton had language, if the action is an investigation or inquiry that poses no immediate demands for a change or in practice, the ICANN General Counsel may, upon receipt, and Steve had changed that to, unless impractical under the circumstances, the ICANN General Counsel shall engage in dialogue with the registry or with the registrar or registry if appropriate. I changed the shall to may just from my lawyer side, saying that I don't want to force the general counsel to take an action. You can't really force ICANN, although you'd want to try, you know, although they would have the incentive. I don't think we can dictate in this that they shall take action.
Well, that's why I suggested the first phrase there, that if the general counsel says, look, it's too late, we can't have this dialogue, or it's going to be useless to have this dialogue for some reason, then he doesn't. But I think, again, we want to encourage this to happen, if at all possible. So that's why I suggested, unless impractical under the circumstances, the general counsel shall begin the consultation process.
Okay. Actually, I'm okay with withdrawing my may then and putting it back to shall. Milton, are you okay with that change?
I don't have any problem with it.
Okay, so I will put that back to shall. Okay. I think the next major change is at the end of step two, Steve had inserted language that says, if the registry registrar is required by local law enforcement authorities to make changes in its practices affecting compliance with contractual obligations before any consultation process can occur, the registry registrar shall notify or shall promptly notify the general counsel of the changes made and the law regulation upon which the action was based. Any thoughts on that before I go to the next sentence? Okay, then I added again that the registry registrar may request confidentiality, basically, pending the outcome of the proceeding.
So in your definition, the who is proceeding is bounded by the initiation of some action and then at the end by the board decision? Or what is the end of the who is proceeding?
The end of the who is proceeding is step five of our process. It's not dependent on the investigation. It's not dependent on, I mean, it's dependent on everything, basically.
Okay, step five.
It would be kind of weird for example, for Tom to all of a sudden remove the email address from the WHOIS output to comply with national law, and then all the other registrars are like, what's going on? And then ICANN says, we can't tell you because we got a confidential thing. It would be weird.
I agree.
I agree with that. And I think it would probably be in the best interest to find a...
My interpretation of the who is proceeding, and maybe I'm misunderstanding what you meant by that, Jeff, but at this point, the who is proceeding is over. Basically, local law enforcement says, you've got to do this, there's no time to consult, you're just going to do it. And so this sentence was put in to say, you know, obviously at that point, even if there hasn't been any consultation, the registrar has to tell the general counsel, hey, we're being required to do this. I think at that point, it probably would need to become public.
Yeah, I
at
think
least the fact that they're doing it, there might be some.
I think maybe I can modify it. Okay. I wasn't so concerned with the fact that they were doing it being confidential, but more maybe justification or any correspondence.
Yes.
So I'll change that so that reflects that part.
Well, are you just going to eliminate that insertion, or are you going to do something else?
I want to keep the fact that they may request correspondence between the parties to be confidential, but I think that if action is taken, that they need to announce the actions to the community. So I got to go through it and figure out how that would go in there.
Okay.
Or maybe, yeah. I think step three is the general counsel analysis and recommendation. And again, this is where we need to, I think, put some things in about the point that we were making it for the bulk of this call about what action the board can take and when.
Mm-hmm.
But I basically said that what I added at the end is, after Steve inserted, the registered registrar shall be provided a copy of the report and provide a reasonable opportunity to comment on it to the board. Again, I inserted a confidentiality aspect, that the registered registrar can make sure it's confidential, except to the ICANN and the ICANN board.
Can you comment on the significance of the change made by Steve, in which he changed the language I had, permit the registrar to comply with, refrain on a provisional basis from taking enforcement action against the registrar for noncompliance?
Yeah, this is, I think it's really just a drafting change. I mean, the ICANN board doesn't permit somebody to comply with law. They comply with law or not. It's just, what are the consequences of that? So
okay.
Even if it takes them out of compliance with their contractual obligation, this basically says, okay, you can go ahead and do that provisionally, even though you're not in compliance with our contract, until the general counsel reports and the board decides what, if anything, to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's intended just as a drafting change.
Yeah, and I kind of agree with Steve's change because, again, it's not commenting on, it's not ICANN saying whether a registrar is allowed to comply with law. It's ICANN saying we're going to not enforce the contract against you while it's
understood.
And then I think in step five, public notice, I added a bunch of language here on the confidentiality. My concern is here that the public obviously should be notified of what's going on. But I think that the general counsel's report may contain, because it's general counsel communicating with his board or her board. And so not everything, my concern is that there will be confidential information contained within that report. But I do think that public should be notified. So what I put in here is, prior to the release of such information to the public, the registrar may request that certain information, including but not limited to communications between the registrar and ICANN or other privileged confidential information, may be redacted from the public notice. In the event that such redactions make it difficult to convey to the public the nature of the actions being taken by the registrar, the general counsel shall work with the registrar on an appropriate notice to the public describing the actions being taken and the justification for such actions. So it's not meant to deprive the public of what's going on, but more to not just say that this report, because otherwise when the general counsel is drafting the report, it's going to have to be incredibly careful. And you're probably going to see, like what you see currently for the ICANN resolutions, you'll just see the resolutions and you won't see rationale or anything. Does anyone have any concerns about that?
Yeah, I'm just wondering what kinds of what are you protecting the registrar or registry against here?
I'm protecting them from. I'm thinking more of in the litigation realm, more so than
the regulatory
investigation. Yeah, regulatory. I'm thinking of litigation and protecting documents and protecting things from being disclosed.
I would want to know, how do you think this affects the ability of the public to know what's going on, and in particular the public awareness of how privacy is or is not affected by certain actions?
Well, let me give you an example. Let's say if there's certain communications going on between the registrar. And even in the regulatory body, let's say it's a regulatory situation, and let's say that the registrar provides that to ICANN under confidentiality, And then the ICANN, the report to the board basically states that there's been certain communications between the parties, and you know, this is what one side argued, this is what the other side argued, and this is the ultimate conclusion. I don't think it's important for the public to know what the two parties argued, or as important to know what was argued and the ultimate outcome and the rationale for the outcome. I think that's important to go to the public. But I know that just in dealing with litigation and where ICANN is involved or an ICANN issue is involved, as a lawyer, there's a lot of things that you do need to protect your privilege and confidentiality and not disclose certain things to all third parties. So here what I'm saying is the public's got a right to know what happens and why something happens, you know, justifications. But the report provided to a board director or provided to the board may not need to go completely out to the public. And I'm not saying it's going to happen a lot. I'm saying that there needs to be built-in mechanism, and it can't just be automatic. The report going to the general counsel is provided verbatim to the world.
There, you know, there may be some way to just have a sentence or two that's applicable to the whole procedure that provides some degree of ability to redact information and so on. I got to think that there have been some previous ICANN policies maybe where this was addressed.
Yeah, unfortunately, part of it is also being addressed now by the Registry Services PDP, or whenever there's a change in service. Let me give you an example. When our registry wants to change something, oftentimes we provide ICANN with an economic analysis, you know, giving certain financial data of ours out to show how the change will affect our systems. But that's not something that we want the world to know, or the public should know. But it's something that helps ICANN make its decision, or the ICANN board make its decision. Concrete example is we just changed our billing practices, and we needed to provide, ICANN wanted to know how financially that would affect certain things, and we gave them stats. And, you know, there was a board report that discussed some of those elements, and that the board report wasn't released to the public, but the action and the resolution was. So that's the concept, Milton.
Well, what I see here is that the board's resolution, along with the council's report, will be ordinarily made public, but that a registrar can say, we want you to redact this and that, and then if the general counsel thinks it makes it difficult to understand what's happening, they enter into some kind of negotiations, basically. In that case, I guess I don't see, you know, I mean, that's fairly acceptable to me. I don't see the point, then, of the next two paragraphs.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's a separate issue.
Yeah, that's a separate issue. So the next two paragraphs are that Steve had inserted that unless the board decides otherwise, if the result of the board's resolution is that data elements of the registrar's WHOIS output will be removed or made less accessible, the resolution shall contain the following features. And Steve, do you want to go into the two?
This was in my earlier proposal and in several earlier proposals. It's just that if the result of this whole process is that something is taken, you know, something is withheld from public display, then that should be stated in the WHOIS output. And if it's possible to direct people to alternative sources of this information, that should be done. I mean, we've heard a lot that you don't need WHOIS in order to find this out. There's other alternative ways of getting this, and I'm not sure what they are, but there certainly could be in some circumstances, and this recommendation was simply to say that should be part of the WHOIS output when if that's the ultimate resolution of the case. And I think I had the words if possible, or let me see, to include if possible. I mean, if it's not possible, then they shouldn't, they would include it, but...
I don't think they're
leading you to a competitor or anything like that.
Yeah, what I did, is, you know, if possible has several meanings. I mean, anything's it's always technically possible to su-
suggest another source. My point is that, especially for like a thick registry, let's say the registrar, let's say Tom Keller Schlund is prohibited from displaying an element, but they actually send that, like let's say it's an email address, they send it to the thick registry, so let's say they send it to Afilius, and Afilius decides to or has to by contract display it. I'm not sure if the national authorities come down on Schlund and says, we don't want you to display it, I'm not sure Schlund's going to kind of want to thumb their nose at the regulatory body and say, well, you can't get it from us, so just go to Afilius' website and you'll get it. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that's a completely unreasonable thing to be putting in here. If the whole point of this is to give the registrar the ability to comply with the local requirements, why are we basically trying to have a back door or some kind of alternative ways of doing the same thing? I mean, if the government doesn't want them to do it, then they shouldn't do it.
All the government is saying here is you can't put this in your WHOIS output, and Milton, you know, we keep hearing from the non-commercial constituency that there are alternative sources to this for this data, and if that's the case...
You've never heard that from me.
People should be directed to that.
Well, no, I've never said that. Where have I said that?
Well, something I could imagine what we could settle on is that we have to insert at least some kind of a notice that the registrar had to take it out because of privacy concern of the government or something like that, you know, period. You know, it could be, for example, a standard flag saying private privacy instead of the street address, for example, if you have to take out the street address. But so that you mark that the information is still available, but just not sure who is. But pointing to different sources might be difficult.
Yeah. Well, I think at a minimum, Jeff,
it's not the registrar's responsibility.
I would suggest that one, you know, at least the part that goes up through in the who is output. I think that's what Tom is saying. The registrar should be directed to a notification.
Can I make a proposal?
Sure.
You know, it seems to me that some of these areas, we've been on the phone for more than an hour, and I know some of us have got to go. Some of the areas we may not be totally in agreement on, and we do need more debate. Could we have some of this in this particular area put in square brackets and come back to it?
Yeah, I think we're going to do this on the list. I think this is our last point. I think once this point is resolved, then...
Okay.
I'm sorry, it's the last one other than the one major one. So what I'm hearing, Tom and Steve, is that the registrar should have a notice on its WHOIS output, but just basically eliminate the last part of it, if possible, suggesting alternatives.
I think I agree with Marilyn. Let's put that in square brackets.
I got a question. Paul speaking.
Okay, Paul.
Now, our charter or whatever, when the task force was formed, it said we can't talk about or, you know, it doesn't apply to a bulk who is. But what if the national law says, you know, not only can you not display it in the port 43 who is output, but you just can't output it. Would this procedure apply to the bulk who is too?
I think, and someone else speak if you disagree, I think this is meant to apply to all forms of who is. I think once we combine Task Force 1 and 2, I think the charter...
I don't think either Task Force had bulk who is in it.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think this actually would not... I mean, it probably wouldn't take a huge leap of imagination to have some future entity apply this to bulk who is, but I don't think it... I think that the policy provisions that we make will apply only to Port 43.
Such a gaping hole.
I don't agree with that. I think that we're dealing generally with the contradictions between local privacy laws and contractual obligations to ICANN regarding who is.
As far as I remember, our charter is to investigate Port 43 and all the privacy issues around to it, but have to leave out talking about whether it's useful to have bulk who is or not.
Yeah, that we're not talking about that at all.
Correct.
We're not saying we, as the ICANN policymaking organ, think that we should not or should have bulk who is. What we're saying is, here is a procedure to use when local governments challenge some aspect of who is using local privacy laws. If local governments decide to challenge bulk who is, which is something we have as a task force, no opinion about and no mandate to address, why wouldn't ICANN use this procedure?
I'll tell you what, let's say that perhaps Jordan and I can send a request to the council or a request for clarification to the council, because the council can always, if they choose, make an interpretation or revise the charter. So what we can do, Jordan and I can craft something reflecting the question that was asked, Paul's question, and just ask for guidance.
Yeah, because there will certainly actually be some circumstances in which it does affect bulk release. For example, if the controversy is over the collection of data as opposed to the display, then implicitly it would affect bulk release as well. So there is some ambiguity there.
So, Jordan, why don't
we do that?
We'll draft the notice asking clarification from the council. And Marilyn, do you know when the council's meeting next?
I should, but Glenn probably knows.
It's on the 18th of November.
I think it's the 18th.
18th of November.
Okay, I think so.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a couple days to get a notice to the council.
Yeah, remember that, you know, you need to give a notice to the council that you want an agenda addressed, even if you can't be in great detail about the content of it. But we have a, and I think you're on the agenda to give an update.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So we'll take that.
So, Jeff, are you going to circulate a revised version that reflects the...
Yeah, that's
just here, or how? What's the next?
That's my plan. I'm gonna submit a revised version. I'm gonna bracket areas that I think we still need to address, and then hopefully we'll get some discussion going on two issues. The first issue is on whether there's a presumption of for the board to accept registrar actions. But allow flexibility where it affects operations or interoperability. And then the second one is on whether a registrar should include in its notice suggestion of other sources to get the WHOIS information. So those are the two kind of bracketed areas. But I'll in the next day, I will submit a revised draft.
Great.
Okay. Do we have a, Glenn or Jordan, do we have a next call scheduled?
We do not currently have a next call scheduled.
Would you
okay.
like
we
the next call scheduled for the 16th of November?
Well, in theory, we were going to work that on the list, but we haven't. So another call may be, maybe in order. What I would suggest maybe is if it works for everyone's schedule, is to arrange a call for next week, and we can briefly cover the next call. And additionally, maybe we can resolve the sort of outside experts we discussed in the last call, which I still owe an email to the group on, which I'm hopefully going to send off in the next hour or so, which we were going to discuss on the list, but maybe we could finalize that next week as well on tiered access, just in terms of how we might reach out to other groups and if we wanted to do anything at Cape Town.
I think that's a great idea. We also need to put on our agenda a discussion of what we will be doing at Cape Town, right? Because there will be meetings of the task forces with the counselors privately, but separately from that, there are public sessions scheduled for each of the task forces.
Yeah, exactly. So I think maybe we could segue from what I was just talking about on the tiered access experts into what specifically we want to do in Cape Town, and with a maybe brief conversation on the first topic at the start of a call next week.
By the first topic, you mean like David Maher's proposal on the notification?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Which I think is basically 99% complete, but we had a couple pending issues just about implementation tidbits that we were going to work on list that we really didn't.
So our call would be Tuesday at the same time, 11?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Sounds good.
Thanks.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay. Bye.
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 Bye.